sometimes in Dharma circles, Buddhist circles, you might hear somebody say, I'm practicing not self now, I've done my work on self-acceptance. Or someone saying, actually, I'm working on self-acceptance, that not self-teaching, that's way beyond me. Right? And I'm wanting to, and that's okay, that has a validity. I'm wanting to see where they may need to work together. Much that could be said. One of the ways the Buddha asked us to contemplate not self, and I want to clarify, he didn't say no self, he said not self. It's very easy for the mind, the brilliant cognitive mind, to land either side of that question, because the cognition invariably has to divide things. That's its function, right? It can say this and not that. Concepts actually, if we believe them as truth, divide things. Of course they have a place, but what it's easy to do with the mind is to say, oh, the Buddha said there's no self, right? Okay, I don't really exist. Okay, oh dear, what am I going to do about that? Because I feel like I do. What he points out, again, there's two extremes. One extreme is positing self as having an inherent reality, which is what it feels like, doesn't it? It's like, feels like there's a little Catherine in here, but if I just keep kind of peeling back, I'll find the little nugget that's got Catherine written on her, right? That's going to one extreme. The other extreme is to say, no, 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 no. There's nothing there. There's no self there. The doctrine of not self is the middle way, right? He's not actually landing in letting the mind establish a position around that. And that's the brilliance. That's where it keeps saying, come back to your direct experience, because this is where it's realized. Here. You won't wrap your head around this. Luckily. Wouldn't that be a shame if we could wrap our head around everything? Heads are great. The Buddha was not an anti-intellectual, not at all. He was very smart. Very bright. But in terms of where we're willing to leave off what we already know and enter into, oops, this kind of sometimes messy, not always clear territory of me taking a step and walking meditation, then I feel like, oh, I wish I could have a cup of tea. How is that relevant? How is that relevant to the very insight and depth that he's speaking about? Because that's where it's realized. And when he said, encouraged us to contemplate not self, he says, look in these five areas of your experience and see, can you find a self there? Look, if you find one, let me know. But see if you can find something that has its own inherent identity. And he said, look at these five areas called the five skandhas. Form, body, things. Keep looking in your direct experience. Can you find any last place at which you go, there it is? No, you take the arm off, you take the leg off, you take the organs out, you take the sinews out. There's just more and more space. And we know that also from science, right? There's no final thing you arrive at. It just reveals more and more room. And we can know that directly. Form. So body, and body is something we take as self, isn't it? It's me that gets hurt. It's my body that aches. It's my body that gets sick. It's my body that's going to die. Feeling, the second area to look at. And feeling in the Dharma teachings isn't emotions, it's the direct experience of weather. Right now, tell me. Did you register that as pleasant, unpleasant, or neither? Anyone?
Neither.
Unpleasant, neither. Right, all experience, anything, any contact, moment to moment, will be one of these things. That's it, I'm afraid. Whether you're a Buddha, or whether you're completely deluded, our experience will always be one of those things. And he said, we tend to take that as self. It's like, it's unpleasant, stop doing it to me. Right? We pick it up, we pick up the thing in the river, and we start to spin a story around it. Why does she do that? Why? And then we're spinning. Form, feeling, perception, third area. Perception in Dharma teachings translates from the word sanya, which means the way the mind makes meaning of things. Right? So, for example, I make the sound. I'll do a different one. No sound this time. The mind starts to try and weave meaning around things in order to give it some coherence and a place to land. And that's what we do, don't we? We look in the mirror and we say, that's me. So we're identifying with body, and it's like, well, it shouldn't look like that. And if I could just do a little bit more of that, or tweak it there, or do that there, or do some of that, it means, and the perception, it means no one's going to love me because I look like that. Right? This is some of the things we do. Or, actually, everyone's going to love me because I look like that. I'm doing two very gross examples, but we spin a meaning out of a direct contact, and the Buddha says that's going way too far. That's going way too far. Stay with the direct experience. Fourth area, sankharas, translates as patterning, our programs. Your top 10 programs, like if you were a computer, what would be your main programs that you've got ready to bring up on your desktop? That you might have your Skype and your entourage and your... But your programs will be things that are ready to get you going. Right? There they are, these little icons jumping up and down, ready for something to happen, then you to go, you see? It's always like that. Right, maybe you're one of those, or you've got a program that goes, yeah, no, I knew I shouldn't have really been born. Right? It may not come that consciously in your head, but there's another program where we have a kind of reluctancy or a withdrawal or a pulling back. The programs are the things, the patterns in the water, the detritus off the moor that get stuff going in some form. Generally speaking, either over-energized or under-energized, the programs. And the fifth one is sense consciousness. We take that as self. We take the consciousness that registers impressions. Right? There's a sensitivity that you have. You register that impression. That's sense consciousness. And it's as simple as that. But we pick it up, and the lock called I am, the lock takes hold of it. I'm knowing that. She did that here with me. It's made an impression on me. I'm the one who is knowing that clap. Actually, that's all extra. In the immediacy, there's sound, sight, taste, smell, touch, thought. The additions are extra. So there's the place we can study. And if all that seems like an awful lot of study, luckily we're only ever asked to keep it really simple. So if you let that teaching go, I wanted to offer it because it's a beautiful piece that if you want to look further into, you can look it up online, the teaching of the five skandhas. This is really where the Buddha picks up the teaching of not self. And it's quite profound and to be contemplated. But there's a lot of places in us that are yearning for acceptance. A lot of feelings in our heart. A lot of just the sense of us. Sometimes we're just longing to be accepted. Does that ring a bell? Anyone? We just want to be completely welcomed in this world. We haven't felt like we've quite landed, some of us, here fully. And no matter how nice someone is to us, It doesn't necessarily do it. It can be healing a little bit. But there's something about this need for completely turning to those places in ourself. The places that I have not been able to accept, whether it's my body, form, whether it's feelings, that from the pleasant, unpleasant and neutral, and then the way, the whole world of our sensitivity, places of our sensitivity that we have not been able to accept. Maybe we're really, really sensitive. Maybe we're not at all sensitive, but we can't accept that either. Our perceptions, our patterns. How are you with your patterns? How welcoming are you? Oh, here's that really mean part of me coming up again. Oh, welcome. Come sit with me. Here's that really rageful, bitter part of me, and it's the truth. When we identify with something as being who I am, we're not accepting it. When we take my anger to be real, when I take my despair to be the whole truth, when I take my magnificence to be really the way things are, whether I take my pained, contracted, limited sense of self, when I take any of them to be who I am, I'm not accepting them. Acceptance is quite radical. Acceptance means we've taken our hands off the anger, we can see it, and we can go, oh yeah, you too. When we take our hands off the condition itself, and do you understand what I mean when I use the word condition? Anything that arises, actually. When we take our hands off, it can start to open out. It's a little bit like, you know, if you approach my cat, I have a cat, if you approach her slightly too enthusiastically, she's scarper. Right? So if you come with, oh, I want to accept my cat, and she's, woo, she's gone. Right? She's not going to show up in that kind of environment. It's a little too much for her sensibility. Right? If I completely back off and never pay attention to her at all, hang out with her, that, and this is a metaphor, I don't even know if it's going to work yet, if I ignore her completely, that's not an acceptance. But if I approach her with hands, you know, like you do with a little sensitive animal, with hands that are open, that she can sniff a little bit first, right? And then she can relax. Then the cat and I start to have a relationship and she can show herself to me. It's the same with our formations, our patterning, our stuff, our material. We approach it with hands that are close, but not grabbing hold of it. So I've got to work on my, what have you got to work on? Got to work on my sadness, right? That's not going to do it. There's no respect there. There's no acceptance there. The sadness will only find its way back into the river and its beautiful journey to expand into the ocean when we learn how to handle it wisely. Which is first seeing it, we need the mindfulness and the recognition. Ah, here's sadness. Here's stuckness. Here's hurt. Here's bitterness. That which can see the bitterness is not the bitterness. Right? When we're in and believing it, we're going, I shouldn't be bitter, or it's because of them, or take our hands off. Oh, wow. There's envy. Wow, I never knew I had envy. Here it is. Here's this part of my body that I've never been able to accept, that I've always looked upon with eyes of contempt. Huh. What would it mean to practice seeing this, holding this with acceptance? So acceptance is not an act of will. You can try. I didn't find it worked. You can orient the mind, you can incline the mind, saying, yeah, I want to be able to accept this. I see this place of myself that I have never been able to accept. Maybe something from my past, maybe something of conditions that keep arising in me. We can say, yeah, I want to orient to acceptance, but we can't make it happen. We can take our hands off, we can see clearly, we can say, aha, it's this. Oh, it's jealousy. Huh. That which sees the jealousy is not the jealousy. Right? Can you see that? This capacity we have of this wakeful, bright mind is not bound to any particular condition. It is not limited by the things that show up in the river. But we keep thinking it is, because we keep reacting to them. And back off, and there maybe you can see that the understanding of not self, right? Ah, here's the rage. That is very close to the acceptance, right? Because that which can stand back, take her hand off, can say, okay, you're here too. You're here too. And our heart actually can extend to welcome that. Which is very courageous, because our anxiety or our limited view would have us believe, if I welcome those dodgy conditions, if I'm kind to myself when I've got anger, then the world will never be a better place. Right? But it's something more radical than that, because this refuge in the wakefulness of standing in the river right there while all these conditions start to move through, this has a power and strength and refuge that we learn more and more how to trust. This is our refuge, not the condition, because that keeps changing. There's anger, there's joy, there's enthusiasm, there's can't stand it anymore. Right? That keeps changing. This standing in the river and this refuge in the wakefulness is something that can take us home. That can take us home. I'm not taking anything of the river to be me. I actually learn to accept what's in the river. And then things can start to move to the sea. Right? One teacher says, people go from wave to wave looking for wetness, never knowing that they are the ocean. We look at the wave, is this me? Do you remember Dr. Seuss? Did any of you have Dr. Seuss stories? Where there's this little one called Are You My Mother? And there's a little duck or something, probably after the Bowlby era, where there's this little chicken or duck or something looking up at everything, like a big tractor and then a big crane, saying, are you my mother? It's like we're doing that with experience. Is this me? Is this me? Somebody tells me, oh, you're great. Oh, I'm great. Okay. Someone else next time says, I really couldn't stand that talk you gave at Cambridge. Oh, I'm terrible. Is that who I am? Are you my mother? Is this who I am? It's like all the conditions. Let them rest. So profound acceptance for those places we haven't turned to yet. And sometimes something that can really support that is some self-forgiveness, actually, because some part of us sometimes has some kind of objection that I can't accept that, not that thing, but I did. Right? And when we're ready, we can turn towards that too. Not trying to have had a different path. That's not practice. But when it's ready to come to the surface, we can feel the resonance of it. There may be pain. There may well be pain. But that's different than claiming it as myself. And the forgiveness work, maybe I'll bring that up when we come to sit next, as a support to the self-acceptance. So let's take 20 minutes for walking practice.